Hour number three of 3D here on this Tuesday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a great day. You're at the midway point. Hey, hang in there. You're almost done today. Lunch, you're heading home.
Mm-hmm.
Darren, Derek, and Donick with you every day 10 to 2. Thursday's a big day. This is a big week for sports and drafts. The NHL is going to be at it with their expansion draft tomorrow in Vegas. The NBA will conduct their draft on Thursday, and then the NHL will be back at it for the league on Friday. And to help us with all that, Blue Ribbon Yearbook, he does an unbelievable job covering college basketball. Chris Dortch is on the line with us. Chris, how you doing?
I'm well, guys. How are you?
Are you excited? You know, you're always a part of this NBA draft coverage, and you always do a spectacular job of breaking down these kids moving on to the next level. What's jumped out to you to this point as we sit here a couple days out?
Well, I think the big thing was you know, everybody speculated as soon as the Celtics won that number one pick in the lottery, what would they do with it? Would they keep it? Would they trade it? And we got our answer yesterday that the trade with the 76ers was made final. And I don't know if this is spin or not, but Danny Ainge, the Celtics president, has gone on record as saying, you know, we're going to get our guy, the same guy we had taken number one, we're going to get him with number three. Now, maybe that's some kind of, I don't know, strategy that he's putting out there or what, but I do know this, it's a deep draft, and you really can't go wrong one to three, really, maybe even one through five. I think you're going to get a solid, you know, all-star type guy for a number of years. So that was the big thing that stood out to me, and there's still repercussions. I mean, the Celtics still have some cap room. You know, there's some free agents out there. There's some trades they could possibly make. They could end up with Gordon Hayward and Blake Griffin and still be under cap. So it's pretty incredible what they've put together. And you know, really, they hijacked the Brooklyn Nets for some, you know, some older former stars. And to me, that's the worst philosophy in trying to build a franchise ever, what Brooklyn tried to do, and Garnett and Pierce and those guys in exchange for basically mortgaging your future. And Danny Ainge was only too happy to take those picks from him.
Yeah, what a dumpster fire Brooklyn has turned into. So what is the cutoff for you? You mentioned there's that first tier. So you said three, four, maybe five guys. So give me the name that is the cutoff. So obviously we know Fultz and Ball are in there. Where's your cutoff point of that first tier?
Well, I think Josh Jackson will be a terrific pro.
Okay.
I think that that's who, if the, you know, if the rumors are to be believed, that's who Danny Ainge was talking about, that they would have taken number one. I think De'Aaron Fox is a guy that, you know, hard to believe that he might have been a little underrated until Kentucky took out UCLA in the NCAAs. And I think he threw a little 39-point number on Lonzo Ball. And those of us who are fortunate enough to see Kentucky play a little bit, see the SEC play a little bit, a lot, I don't think we were surprised by that. But so he's another guy. I think Jason Tatum, in another year, in a different time, he'd probably be the consensus number one pick. And then I think it goes all the way down to maybe Malik Monk, which people are saying is an easy top 10 pick. Dennis Smith from NC State is in there. Jonathan Isaac, a young big from Florida State, is in that group too. So, and then the kid Lauri Markkanen from Arizona is another guy, a multi-talented guy. So this draft is really good. There's even some guys that are kind of unheralded, you know, that, I don't know if come out of nowhere is the right expression, but you got a guy like a Zach Collins, a guy like John Collins from Wake Forest that, you know, really just blossomed in over the course of this year and turned themselves into lottery picks. So there's a lot of talent out there. It's one of the deeper drafts. I've been doing this for NBA TV and NBA.com for 8 or 9 years now, and it's, if not the deepest draft, right there with among the deepest since I've been doing this.
Markelle Fultz, everybody seems to really, really sing his praises. I think what worries me the most is Philadelphia is going to draft him, and I don't trust them. Yeah, I don't trust them at all.
No, he's going to blow out an ankle or something, knock on wood, hope he doesn't. But, yeah, I mean, on paper, they look great, but Joel Embiid's had trouble with his back. They knew that going in. You know, the kid from LSU, Ben Simmons, gosh, he's as versatile a player as you'll see in the last decade, out all year with a foot injury. So what's that mean for Markelle Fultz? I don't know. But if those three are healthy, that's as good a young nucleus just about as anybody in the league can put together.
Now, looking at this this year's NBA draft, it's a very deep draft, as you touched on, Chris. The guy that I'm very intrigued about, because he wasn't a starter at Gonzaga, is Zach Collins. You spoke a little bit about him. But what makes him so intriguing? Is it his ability to be a guy that can shoot outside, but because he's a big guy, a tall guy, he could play in the inside, good defensive player? Because I'm thinking a guy like that should have been a starter for Gonzaga, but I understand their center situation. They had someone in front of them that was very good also. But then you get a guy that could have been an All-American had he been a starter. Then he gets to the NBA. Will his skill set translate right off the bat?
Well, that's a good question, man, and it's one I can answer pretty well because I spoke with him the other day, and Mark Few did a piece. It's on NBA.com right now about him. And, you're right. He had the big guy, Karnowski, in his way, who, oh, by the way, won the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar Award as the best center. And in talking to Zach, you know, he was able to joust with a 7'1", 300-pound guy that was still mobile and had to learn. You know, he told me he just couldn't put a shot in his face. He couldn't out-muscle him. He had to figure out ways to score around this mountain of a dude that was pretty menacing. So that was the thing, I think, Derek, that helped his development. And then you start looking at his measurables. You know, he's a 7-footer with a 7-plus wingspan. So he's automatically a gifted shot blocker. His dad played college basketball at New Mexico State, understood the benefit of teaching his son a face-up game even at his size. So he's a solid face-up shooter even from three. But the thing that Mark Few said, and the reason he thought he'll be what he's called a great pro, is the fact that he works hard and he's never going to back down from anybody. His only flaw that was noticeable as a freshman was that he got in foul trouble. Fouled out 7 times, led Gonzaga in personal fouls. He was just too aggressive. But as Coach Few told me, you know, any coach will tell you, you'd rather have to dial a guy back than dial him up. It's just hard to dial a guy up if he's not predisposed. So if you count the physical gifts, the training he's had from his father at an early age, his work ethic, and the fact that he's not afraid. This is a guy who, you know, Mark Few said, he can be an all-star.
Now, another guy that I'm interested in is his teammate, Nigel Williams-Goss. This is a guy that played extremely well during the tournament, and he came out and said, listen, it was better for me to come out this year because it's still fresh on everyone's mind. Where do you see him projected in the draft?
Well, Derek, he's unfortunately most of the mock drafts, and I don't deal in the mock drafts because they hired me for my college connections, and I kind of come at their draft coverage, NBA.com, I mean, from the college perspective. Mm-hmm. And so I can give you what I think from that perspective.
Yeah, so based on what you've seen, how does he project
I like
to the NBA?
I love the kid. And I think he can be a solid backup point guard in the league. I don't necessarily agree with him that he had to come out now and strike while the iron is hot. I think another year of leading Gonzaga into another deep run might have helped him. And the other thing is, as we've talked about, this is a deep draft. So, you know, you sort of get lost. It's a draft that is awash in really good point guards. I'm going to give you my sleeper here in a minute, but that's a kid that nobody's heard of that can play the point in the NBA. And he wasn't even a player at the D1 level until last year. So the draft is awash in point guards. And so I believe that he might have been better served staying in school. Now he's in that late second round to undrafted category. Sometimes that can be good. I mean, it worked for Isaiah Thomas. He was the 60th pick, and now he's an all-star for the Boston Celtics. A 5'9", wishes he were 6'6", you know, point guard, but really wants to be a shooting guard. Nigel Williams-Goss, on the other hand, you know, he knows what he is. He's a competitor and a leader. I really love the kid, but I don't know. He might have to go it as a free agent.
Chris Dorch is with us. Blue Ribbon College Basketball Yearbook, contributing to NBA.com for the draft coverage here coming up. Chris, great to talk to you. Let me ask you about Luke Kornet, such a unique skill set. What do you think's in store for him? What do people tell you about his potential? Because, you know, you look at the pedigree there, there's a lot to like.
There really is, Willie. And my guy, Scott Howard Cooper at NBA.com, I think he's one of the most learned and knowledgeable and experienced observers of the draft scene. And the reason he and I work together so well is he comes at it from the polar opposite of where I do. He comes at it from the NBA executives. And he talks to a lot of people and a lot of scouts and GMs. And he is one of the few guys that has Luke Kornet in his mock draft. I just noticed he had, if you want to look it up, it's on the first page of NBA.com. He calls it mock 3.0. He's got Luke Kornet in there. Late second round, but he and I have talked about Luke at length, and you're right. There's a lot to like there. He's a big man who can impact the floor on both ends. I don't think people gave him enough credit for being a disruptor in the post defensively as he was. He's long and he's active, and he can get to shots. And then, of course, he was a guy that, you know, he initially came here as a guy that could make threes. His three-point percentage sort of it came and it went over the course of time. And then I thought his low post presence as an offensive player improved. The thing that the unknown about him, he was hurt a little bit. And it's always the case, Willie, you know this, having played with some teammates, the game is hard on bigs, particularly stress reactions in their feet and lower extremities. And people are going to want to see that he is going to be, you know, hardy enough for
right.
And it's a long season. You know, you got 82 games, you got a preseason, and then you got the playoffs. So I think that's the biggest question mark that I'm hearing about him. I think he's got the tools to play in the league for sure.
The thing that I think would be interesting about him, in my mind, and just watching him a lot, I thought he had to take a lot of contested threes, even for a guy that could get his shot off. I just think his percentage would potentially be higher in the NBA where he's not the focal point of the scouting report. I think he could get a lot more open looks just by being a big man who could step out. So that'd be an interesting theory to put on notice here, but time will tell.
I agree with that, and you know, you were a three-point shooter of some note, and you know,
Wow! Do you have that on tape, Chase? Keep that.
Yeah, we have that.
Keep that.
What Willie
just when
knows.
We thought you were credible, then this comes out.
I went and blew the whole deal right there. No, Willie understands this. It's not necessarily about form and mechanics. Sometimes it's about selection. And what is a good shot? And you're right. You know, he was the go-to guy. He was scouting report exhibit 1A, 1B, 1C when you teed it up against Vanderbilt. And He had to force some shots. He had to do some things that were maybe out of character. But, you know, you talk about a pick and roll, pick and pop. You know, this guy's your dude. I think shooting percentage has a lot to do, and that was a good point you make about selection. And in the NBA, they run that pick and roll to death. And he's a guy that can do that, either roll to the hoop or pick and pop. And he's a good enough shooter. And, again, with him, I think it's just, is he going to be able to withstand the rigors of the season? I think he'll find his way onto an NBA roster eventually, whether he gets drafted or not.
Last thing, let's take the hype aside. All of the things that you hear about that have nothing to do with a guy's game. But when you have talks about Lonzo Ball, what is the profile of him? How good do you think he will be?
Well, I'll tell you what. We've been around the game a long time, you and me, and we've seen guys come and go. And you've seen guys, and you hear the old cliche, the measure of a great player is, does he make those around him better? Well, you could see, I mean, the first game I ever saw him, and it wasn't even live, it was on television, you could see that he had natural instincts for being a facilitator, for making guys around him better. And if you look at the numbers, he led the nation in assists. UCLA was one of the more efficient and prolific offenses in the country. I think part of that has to do with system, but a lot has to do with him. So I think he's preternaturally inclined to be able to be a setup guy, a leader. And then people talk about his jump shot. It's a little funky. You know, he releases it from the hip. He may or may not be able to get away with it. They said he couldn't do it at the power conference level. Guess what? He shot over 40% from three. If it's going in, if I'm his coach, I'm real hesitant to mess with it. So I think he can score. He can get to the rim. And like you said, you know, not even mentioning his size, all that package in a 6'6 body. He's got to get a little stronger. But, you know, if he goes to the Lakers, you know, it's showtime again.
His name is Chris Dortch. Most of the time his info is really good. Sometimes he has lapses, but he recovers. That's what's good about Chris. Thanks for doing this. We'll be watching on Thursday and reading your stuff.
Thanks, guys.
Yep.
See you.
Chris Dortch, Blue Ribbon
back.
Yearbook.
Chris,
man,
got my
he
back.
Said Willie in a 3-point.
He found
point.
Some rare
man.
Video.
What was hey, your
I
three,
get you. I
what,
get you.
What was your 3-point percentage?
Let's look it up.
Yeah, we need to
All right,
look
we'll
that
do that.
Up.
We'll
yeah.
come back. We also have something we want to pose to you when we come back. As well, you the listeners. We'll do that. You're listening to 3D, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.